with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, let's take it one step further and just say reclaiming that which you have always been. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or perhaps you want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if you're in high voice tonight and you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call the toll-free line. We'll get you here on the air. It's 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. So I just invite you to call in. Always like to have a good conversation with people on the air. And these broadcasts are now podcasted in case you want to go back and listen to the tonight's show again, or you can go back into the archives and you can pull up and listen to previous shows. And, you know, these podcasts are also available to download on Audible, iTunes, and Amazon Music. And you can also listen to the show on iHeartRadio Station 1. Well, for those of you tuning in for the first time, I just want to say a hearty welcome to the broadcast. And each and every one of these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And that gives us just a wide, wide variety of just how we can continue this integration of our spirituality with, you know, mental health. So for those of you new to the program, I would like to say that just in the sense of being transparent, I am a firm believer that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything we need it for in this life in terms of our giftedness, or in terms of our skills, or our talents, and our strengths, and character traits, personality, so on and so forth. And yet, you know as well as I do that as we go along in life, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness, or we think that we have no talent whatsoever, or we just cannot find the inner strength, or we wish we just had a different personality or something, or we push our giftedness way down so that others cannot see it, because perhaps they looked at our gifts and our skills and our talents, and they, for one reason or another, you know, working out of their own woundedness, they exploited those things. And so we figured the best way to protect that giftedness is to just put it way, way down so that others cannot see it. Or there's also the strong possibility that perhaps people were told that they would never amount to anything as they were little kids, or maybe, you know, told that they were a disappointment, or whatever other voice you heard telling you that there's nothing special to you. And at any rate, whenever we go down that road, and whenever we do not realize our giftedness, and we go through life functioning from a place of woundedness instead of a place of healing, wholeness, and uniqueness. And this is something that I just really love to explain to kids and teenagers, actually people of all ages, but the kids just eat this up because I tell them, you know, look at your thumb. You know, we all have a thumbprint. You know, we all have gifts and skills and strengths and so forth. And yet, no two gifts, no two talents and skills and strengths are alike. So it's like a thumbprint. Everybody has one. No two are identical. And that's this hacheatos, this uniqueness. That's what makes you, you. In other words, two people could be doing the same job, but because of your thisness, because of your uniqueness, you're going to do that job according to your gifts, your perspectives, your skills and talents and so forth. And the other person will do the same thing. So it may not be identical, but that's okay because you're both performing the same role or the same job from your uniqueness, your hacheatos. And yet there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Simply having the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and rediscovering what you have always been. So before we get started tonight, just want to do a quick shout out, wishing everyone an early happy Thanksgiving. Hopefully your day tomorrow will be filled with pleasant memories and lots of leftovers. And just one of the things that I'm reminded of every year, just throw out a little statistic here, that unfortunately, Thanksgiving is still the number one holiday in which the local police are called to more domestics, you know, more home calls than any other holiday. And so I am convinced it's because families have never dealt with anything since last Thanksgiving, or maybe something happened in, let's say, the 4th of July or Labor Day, and it just carried over because of unresolved issues. Well, I hope that in gathering with your families that there will be a spirit of reconciliation, let's say, or a spirit of forgiveness, or a spirit of, no, we're just not going to talk about that today, but we will. But today is a day for sitting around a table and enjoying the food and just spending time with family. And I know lots of families who may be going through, you know, a Thanksgiving tomorrow, where this is the first major holiday in which they do not have their loved one. And a lot of people have asked me, what do we do? You know, we've always gone to grandma's house, but hey, grandma's not here. Or we've always gone over to my father's house, but hey, dad's not here. Or whatever the situation is, they had passed since last Thanksgiving. And so, you know, I always say that it's up to the family. It's up to you as to, you know, what traditions you want to keep or what ones do you want to begin? You know, what are some new traditions that you would like to take on? And so for people whose loved ones have passed recently, and here's the first Thanksgiving, I always recommend to, you know, set out a plate. So, have a place setting for their loved one and just where they would sit, you know, plate, silverware, a cup or whatever, coffee cup, glass, and have your meal and enjoy the food. And when it comes time for the meal to end, and maybe you're, you know, getting ready to serve the coffee or the pie or whatever, pumpkin roll, that's when whoever would like to begin, share stories of your loved one. What was their favorite food at Thanksgiving? What were some of the crazy things they used to do, or what were some of the crazy things they used to say? You know, share your fondest memories with each other. And just like hacheatos, just like this uniqueness, no two memories are going to be alike because everybody has a different perspective. And when you get a group together, when you get families together, and they share those different perspectives, you really gain just a broader, a deeper appreciation for your loved one. And I tell you, when it's done right and these stories are shared in the right spirit, wonderful healing, tears, laughter, joy occur. So passing that on to you in case you're still wondering, you know, how are you going to negotiate this Thanksgiving without your loved one? Well, how many of you out there are familiar with the song The Dark Side of the Moon? Okay. Now, apart from being one of the coolest albums ever produced and sung by Pink Floyd, the Dark Side of the Moon album is actually a reference to the far side of the moon, which always faces away from Earth. And in fact, according to astronomers, both sides of the moon have about 2 weeks of sunlight followed by 2 weeks of darkness, which the phrase dark side of the moon comes from. Now, before you accuse me of ripping off Pink Floyd, okay, today I just wanted to explore how we can make friends with our, let's say, dark side, our shadow side, that side of our personality that contains, again, all the parts of ourselves that we don't want to admit we have. And the shadow often shows up in very unconscious levels and then moves into our consciousness as we understand those parts and we heal them, we face them, we heal them, and then we integrate healthier ways into our lives. Now, as a kid, we have all done this. We were all fascinated with how our bodies produced a shadow when facing the sun. Or perhaps we even had fun making puppet shades with our hands when standing in front of a movie projector or when a light shone on a wall, or we did that with a flashlight. Either way, we did not pay attention to our shadows when it came to things that we didn't like about ourselves. Or maybe, you know, when you were growing up, you were afraid of the dark and therefore never learned to face it or overcome it. And so, you know, you associated that fear with the dark. I can't see it. I'm afraid of it. I can't understand it. I don't like it. You know, and as we get older, that kind of fear becomes more and more sophisticated, but it's still fear nonetheless. Now, I was always told as a young boy that, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of when it came to the dark, because there's nothing in the dark which also cannot be found in the light. And that's a good point. Actually, it was definitely the work of the Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung that brought the concept of the shadow side to our awareness of understanding who we are. You know, this aspect of ourselves has long been recognized as, I like to say, a universal feature of a person. You know, and according to Jung, the shadow is the source of both our inner creative and destructive energies. Well, I like to think that, you know, we can't fully understand ourselves, we can't fully understand another person without seeing both the light and the shadow, the good and the not so good, the positive and the negative. And see that people are wounded, and yet they're also healed. Well, I did a little bit of research earlier this week, and I found another quote from Carl Jung and talking about the shadow. And he writes in one of his books that, unfortunately, there can be no doubt that humanity is, on the whole, less good than what they imagine themselves or what they want to be, because everybody carries a shadow, and the less it is embodied in humanity's conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. And therefore, at all accounts, it forms this unconscious snag, thwarting our most well-meant intentions. So, in other words, what Jung is saying here, that within each of us lies two parts of a whole, the person we want to be, and some parts of us that conflict with the ideal version of ourselves. And often, the part of us that conflicts with the ideal is the part that has impulsive urges, or desires, and things that we feel but we don't like. Now, this contrast between the ego and the shadow causes us to reject and resist the shadow. And through our projection of the parts of ourselves we dislike, we unconsciously project them on to others. Okay? So, and this can easily be seen in our dislike for certain people. You know, why is it that particular person that just pushes our buttons? Or the specifics we dislike in others is really a strong indication of what we dislike in ourselves. So let me give you an example here. A good example could be somebody that constantly loses their patience, loses their temper, and just starts screaming. Okay? They're just angry, hostile, rageful, and that really disturbs us. You know, they're not hurting anybody, but their words are just so strong, which is this hate and this fear and so forth. And, you know, it's just something we just dislike in that person. Well, why is it that we have such a dislike for a person who loses their temper, per se? Okay. Well, to get that answer, we have to look within ourselves. And, okay, what is it about anger that we dislike? Is it something that we were conditioned as we were younger to be afraid of? Was it something about being shouted at that, again, a filter that when we were young or growing up or another authority figure in our lives shouted at us constantly or berated us or something that we're now conditioned to hear any kind of raised voice through that filter of, uh-oh, I'm in trouble, I'm in danger, I made a mistake, I'm no good, so on and so forth, okay? So that's what I mean by, you know, we project that out onto others, you know, something we do not like in ourselves, we put it out there, okay? So again, I'm going to talk more about that as the show goes on, and why do we do that, and how exactly can we heal the shadow side? Or, you know, let's think of it in terms of Robert Louis Stevenson's story of the strange case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Anybody out there read that for high school or middle school or just read it for fun? Okay, it's a pretty cool story. Because in this story, Dr. Jekyll, he represents the respectable part, let's say, of one's personality. But when he transforms into Mr. Hyde, his shadow personality gains dominance over Dr. Jekyll and wreaks havoc in his life. And the shadow is pretty much a psychological term for everything we can't see in ourselves. And interestingly, Robert Louis Stevens wrote this story back in 1886, a few years before Carl Jung was born. So the concept of what lurks inside of us, that is the shadow side, was already an understood concept. Well, most of us go to great lengths to project, to protect, there we go, Freudian slip there, folks. I'm going to start that sentence over. Now, most of us go to great lengths to protect, there we go, our self-image from anything unflattering or unfamiliar. In fact, you know, many people I counsel often struggle with the concept that they have the capacity for good and evil. You know, for example, some people would say to me, well, I don't get it. You know, how can I have the capacity to love another person deeply? And yet at the same time, I also have the capacity to hurt them deeply. Well, I have a couple of friends out there who excel in both martial arts and acupuncture. And when I asked them, you know, just as you were learning both of these disciplines, which one was the hardest to learn? Which one did you learn first? And without missing a beat, typically my friends say, Well, the first lesson they taught, or the first discipline they learned, was acupuncture. And then they learned martial arts. And this all came from their teacher, or teachers, or mentors, and so forth, who told them that it's easy to hurt another person. It's easy to hurt another person. But to learn how to heal another person, takes greater discipline. And his teacher understood that the capacity to hurt and heal is inside everyone. And so they were taught both. First, learn to heal. And then you realize the discipline of martial arts. You know, every now and then I run into the misperception out there that before you can help others, you have to be free from your own pain and suffering, you know, to first be healed from your own problems, or at least have your act together. And quite often, many people quote Jesus's teaching about taking the plank out of your own eye first before removing the speck of sawdust from another person's eye. And when taken out of context, you know, this Matthew's gospel, the seventh chapter, but when taken out of context, many people wrongly interpret this teaching to mean that others simply have no right to say anything, or people should mind their own business. And again, this is simply often not the case. In fact, it often turns out to be just the opposite, that in spite of themselves, people find ways to reach out to serve others, to offer emotional healing and support. And for example, consider the number of people in your life whom you have helped along the way, or those random strangers that you just spoke words of comfort and grace to, or you healed, you know, or healed you on some level with their kindness. Did these people seem to have their acts together? Or did they just do in spite of their perceived limitations? Did they wait until they had their acts together before reaching out? Or did it appear that they just reached out and they comforted and gifted others? And I'm certain we can make a long list of people who fit that description. And that's just people that we're aware of. And what about others who work behind the scenes? Well, let's take this idea one step further. Would we be willing to add our names to that list? You know, in other words, do we believe that before we can comfort and reach out to others, we have to make sure first, you know, our front porch is swept clean? Well, not necessarily. I mean, ironically, this is the idea that was echoed in Henry Nouwen's book, The Wounded Healer. Very popular, great read. It's a classic book that raises this question. Do we have to wait until we are fully healed from our pests, our wounds, our shortcomings? Now, if the answer is no, then what are we waiting for? We all have psychological, emotional, physical, even spiritual wounds and scars. And these wounds and scars refer to what we have gone through, those reminders of where we have been, not to serve as an excuse that we can make to justify our anger or bitterness or prejudices, but rather our woundedness can often serve as a means to awaken compassion and empathy in us towards one another. And most of the time, society tells us to look at ourselves in terms of like a dualistic sense of good and evil. You know, whether we are this or that, where do we fit? Do we belong with this group or do we belong with that group? You know, and in fact, we may have learned to use both good and evil to our advantage at times. And this is what I mean. I'm sure you've seen those t-shirts that people wear that read, and I'm going to clean up the language here a bit. You know, I'm 50% angel and 50% devil, or some sort of alternative. I've seen some t-shirts that, like, you know, I'm 48% angel, 52% devil, or something like that. But you get the meaning. And I often wonder, why would anybody want to make that statement? Unless, of course, you know, one may be proud of the fact that you can keep others off balance, or at least maybe you want to keep them at a distance. So in other words, be nice to me and I'll be nice to you. But if you're not nice to me, you're going to get the horns and I'll make you pay. And yet, you would not believe the number of times I have heard the same people complain about how lonely and miserable they are. And we can't expect to have it both ways. Now, in all fairness, keeping people at bay in this sense comes from a place that has been wounded and yet to be healed. I get that. You know, granted, people who have been previously hurt in relationships are very leery of being hurt again. That I understand. And yet, others may shy away from this person because they don't want to risk saying something or even doing something in which they're going to get the horns. So, there is potential of both not being able to be in a healthy, satisfying relationship. And there is a common expression out there that cuts across all generations, races, and cultures, and it's that we are going to reap what we sow. Or you're going to call it karma or whatever. And many agricultural societies understand this concept better than anybody else who's ever put a seed in the ground. And if you have good soil, good seed, enough water, sun, and care, a healthy crop will be produced. And the Chinese actually have a saying related to this. It's if a man plants melons, he will reap melons. If he sows beans, he will reap beans. So in other words, every action that we do, okay, let's move it away from the agricultural lesson here, but every action will produce an outcome or consequence or reward. And yet, there is still another way to express this same idea in terms of a person's character. One evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside of people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside of us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, feelings of inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith." Now, the grandson thought about this for a minute. And then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" Well, the old Cherokee simply smiled and replied, "It's the one that you feed." And certainly that which we feed, physically, emotionally, even spiritually, grows to produce more of the same. And this concept is true whether we are referring to agriculture or our own human desires. Well, I'd really love to hear what's on your heart regarding this matter. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after this break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. Be back with you in 1 minute. right. Welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, first half hour of the show, I was talking about how we can make friends with our shadow side, that side of our personality that contains all the parts of ourselves. In other words, the things that we don't want to admit to having. And the shadow often shows up in unconscious levels and then moves into our conscious levels as we understand those parts and hopefully heal those parts and integrate them into our lives. And despite our perceived differences in race and language and religion and culture, there's a common Native American expression that emphasizes an interconnectedness among all that we see, namely Matakio Oyasin, or all are related. And this phrase is understood by the Lakota Sioux people as an expression extending to all of creation, everything, you know, humanity, animals, vegetation, minerals, elements, land, water, thunder, fire, wind, sun, moon, stars, so on and so forth, are all connected to one another and affect one another. And I just want to read just a short paragraph by one of my teachers, Joseph Riel, Beautiful Painted Arrow, in his book, Becoming Who You Are, who explains this connectedness in a really unique way. Joseph writes, "Becoming who you are is also about understanding your relations. It's about remembering that you are related to all the plants and animals, and that they are your brothers and sisters as well. And becoming who you are is about remembering that you are the land and you are the sky. The matter that makes up your body comes from the earth, just as your food comes from the earth. You are a son, a daughter of Mother Earth and Father Sky. Who you are is like a seed buried and hidden deep within your heart. A seed is a circle, the circle of life, which is another name for the medicine wheel. And everything you do in the world starts with you, goes out into the world, and then comes back again. Seeds grown from darkness of unknowing into the light of knowing, then blossoming, creating more seeds. And so when you hold a seed in your hand, it's hard to tell what kind of plant that will grow into. And so it is with you. What kind of human being will you become? In other words, who are you?" You know, how often do we receive our deepest emotional, psychological, physical, and even spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationships with one another? It's just something we just can't get around. And whether the wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do afterwards, once we have been wounded, or let's say that we have wounded another person ourselves. It's what we do afterwards that will either reinforce those wounds or find a way to be healed and be free from those burdens. Again, the two wolves. Which one wins? The one we feed. In fact, you know, the irony is that in order to find our healing, we need to be in healthier relationships in order to heal from those damaged emotions or wounded spirits or lack of emotional and psychological support. Because for too long, humanity has been influenced by the, well, what's in it for me scenarios. And as much as we can become enthralled by our gifts and giftedness, we also need to keep in mind that our talents, our skills, our blessings, and knowledge and wisdom are not for ourselves. These gifts are for the benefit of somebody else. Reclaiming authenticity then compels us to now ask, how can I serve humanity? How can I alleviate suffering? How can I speak up for somebody who does not have a voice or who has yet to find their voice? And this is what living authentically is really all about. You know, some people might even say that they're content to be who they are. But you and I need to ask ourselves, am I being authentic today? Am I being honest and genuine in my relationships? Why do we wait until we are retired, whenever that will be, to do what we have always dreamed of doing? I mean, in all seriousness, folks, what are we waiting for? Having all our bills paid? Having enough money in the bank? Well, too many people I've met play the "I'll get around to it someday" game, while vulnerable and wounded people are in need now. And such hurting people need others to see in them the potential to live authentically, including the benefit of reclaiming their own authenticity. And perhaps people believe that they have too much to lose to be authentic, that it's just, this is just too much, I don't think I can do it. And perhaps they do not know, or that perhaps they fear that people will not accept them as they truly are. Or perhaps they have a fear of rejection or ridicule or shame or being ostracized or shunned. Well, the Native Americans also have a saying that has been passed down from ancient times, a lot of ancient wisdom. And it is that the strength of a tree comes not from growing thicker in the good years when there is water, but from staying alive in the bad, dry times. And we live in a time when, as we focus on the virtue of stewardship, that the one gift that we really need to foster and treasure is the gift of ourself, our inner life, our spirit of resiliency. Because please keep in mind that whenever you discover your gifts and your talents and, you know, what you are very good at, and, you know, just authentic self, we share those gifts with others. They are ours only to be given away. And it's not as if we're going to use them up. You know, there's no expiration date on our giftedness. And there's also tremendous value in reclaiming our authenticity, because we find an inner freedom and strength, an inner peace and assurance of who we are without giving away our uniqueness, playing by somebody else's rules or definitions or expectations. Okay, when we discover who we are, we use our uniqueness to pass those same gifts on to somebody else's, in spite of another person's rules or definitions or expectation. And for some, you know, finding their inner strength to stand on their own two feet further empowers them to reach out for better relationships, or to reach out for better jobs, or to pursue justice. And indeed, those who are authentic often find God's blessing. And I believe this is where the next great spiritual awakening will come from: finding the strength to reclaim our authenticity. And we live in a time when this is truer than ever before. And indeed, the choice is ours. You know, what are we going to feed? If we feed inauthenticity, if we feed our shadow side, then we're simply going to get more of the same. But if we heal and we integrate the shadow, we will behave more genuinely and responsible in our relationships. And once we understand this teaching, the blame game starts and stops with us. So in other words, are we going to be content to throw up our hands and fatalistically say, "Well, that's just the way the world is, nothing we can do about it"? Or do we realize that one simple act of kindness, love, and authenticity sends out ripples of transformation that will wash back ashore to us. We've been given tremendous power, folks, and too much power at times, because without the authenticity of the self, that power to wound and damage others is as dangerous as history has demonstrated. And yet, on the other hand, with authenticity comes a correct use of power, tempered with wisdom and grace for the betterment of all. Reclaiming our authenticity means we now have the capacity to change, the power to be that which has yet to be realized. And when we experience psycho-spiritual transformation, we catch a glimpse of the beginning of something greater than ourselves, with the unlimited potential for life. And I've said this before, you know, with this audience, but as a counseling educator, as a clinician, as a pastoral professional, I'm often saddened by people's beliefs, their comments, even their behaviors, that when it comes to addressing their physical, emotional, and spiritual wounds, they consider themselves powerless and without a voice. And perhaps this powerlessness is a result of never feeling valued or never allowed to use their voice. Because admittedly, many people are unable to perceive their strengths, their insights, as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing, let alone achieving anything meaningful with their lives. And most of the time, people are content to live for brief moments of joy and celebration, marked off by, let's say, transitional milestones of baptisms and marriages and birthdays, graduations, promotions, retirements, etc., etc. And furthermore, when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed not only by the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also the belief that inner freedom, peace, joy, and unconditional love are all too good to be true, that those things belong to somebody else. So, how do we transform the shadow side? What is especially interesting is the idea that the shadow contains not just destructive aspects of the personality, but also there is potent, creative, and powerful capabilities. And during our development, as we get older, certain traits and impulses were made perhaps condemned by our family or peers or educators, not out of care, but let's say they feared something they saw in us, or it was out of envy, that something that they heard from us, that they were jealous, or maybe it was out of ignorance, and so forth. And yet, no progress or growth is possible until the shadow is adequately confronted. And confronting means more here than just simply knowing about it. It's not until we've been truly shocked into seeing ourselves as we really are, instead of what we wish for or hopefully assume we are, that we can take that first step towards discovering who we truly, truly are. And so the first step towards unconditional self-acceptance is to banish the shame. Shame has no business in our lives. It is very toxic, very toxic. This is the first step toward self-acceptance, because I see so many people, even not in a counseling setting, but just out walking around at a store, wherever I'm at, I see a lot of people who just have this self-loathing expression on their faces. And it's heartbreaking, because I know that there's a tremendous amount of shame there. And I can't help but ask the question to myself, who shamed them? How many times did they hear the shame messages before they internalized it and it started to gain, you know, that toxicity in their lives? Well, one of the ways through this is, yes, banning the shame, but how do you do that? Well, you can begin with writing in a journal, especially keeping track of, let's say, your dreams or what messages or symbols come up when you dream. Get to the heart of what shame is. Who shamed you? What were some of the words that were said? And then compare and contrast that with unconditional self-acceptance. How do I love myself? Do I love myself? I'm told that I'm supposed to love my neighbor as myself, but if I don't love myself, how am I going to love my neighbor? So banish the shame. And we can even laugh at ourselves. I find that a lot of people, they either do that too much or they don't do that enough. Some people, if and when they make a mistake or the shadow side comes up, I'm like, oh, okay, wait a minute. Okay, that's not good. Got to work on that some more. Sorry, folks, you know, or whatever. But just to laugh at yourself and to meditate with a focus on self-compassion and acceptance of your own humanness. We're all human. We have a shared humanity. And just like I said, there is no place for shame in that humanity. There is lots of room for self-compassion and accepting of our own humanity. And think of your good qualities and accept the possibility that the opposite may also be true of you, and that's okay. We have the capacity to hurt or to heal. We have the capacity to think good thoughts of somebody else, and we have the capacity to not think those thoughts. We have the capacity to speak kind words to one another, and we also have the capacity to really tear one another apart with our words. Which one do you feed? And do some introspection and ask some tough questions of yourself. You know, what harsh criticisms or judgment of others do I harbor? You know, which ones do I keep going back to? Which ones have I always gone back to? And why are they there? What is it with the harsh criticisms and the judgment of others that I get something out of it? That I want to hang on to this because it serves me in some, you know, just twisted way. And how many times do we point out the flaws of another that we forget to point out the flaws in us and then follow that up with, okay, how do I heal this? Do I need to forgive? Do I need to address this immediately? Do I need to label this as a criticism or a judgment on somebody else? Am I lacking self-compassion here? Am I not accepting my own humanness and so forth? And another aspect of banishing the shame in our lives, the first step towards unconditional self-acceptance, is we need to stop playing the victim. Victimhood and shame go hand in hand. Both are detrimental. Both are toxic. We are not victims, but so many people convince themselves that they are because they feel powerless, or they don't want to take responsibility, or they've never been given permission to look within and to value what they see and hear and feel when they look at themselves or they listen to themselves or they watch themselves do something. So look at your own self, your own prejudices, your own biases. Ask the really tough questions. Ask the really tough questions of yourself. And also keep in mind that because of the societies that we live in, that you may be judged for the shadows as well as appreciated for your authenticity. And so being accepted and know that you can thrive when you place your faith in your own truth, in God, in Source, in yourself. I don't know if you've ever read the book Making Friends with Yourself. It's actually a quite long teaching material by Buddhist Parama Chodron. And she teaches others how to come to terms with themselves, which perhaps hold the greatest fears in their lives, and that's death. And so she is very fond of saying, you know, we need to make friends with our whole selves. We need to begin to love all of ourselves. And we also need to allow ourselves to be ourselves. Begin to know yourself and step fully into that light, fully into that consciousness by bringing your shadow with you. I mean, it's coming along anyway, so why not invite it? Speak to your shadow side for showing you how to transform those areas of your character. Ask your shadow side to teach you. How do I heal? Where do I need healing? And so forth. Another Buddhist enthusiast, Alan Watts. Again, anything that you read from Alan Watts, have to read very slowly because he can be very deep, but fine writer as well. He once said that when you find out that there was never anything in the dark side to be afraid of, nothing is left but to love. And that's a very good point. And here's a good example of what he means. That one of the major psychosocial spiritual obstacles that I run into when counseling others occurs when emotionally or psychologically wounded people are genuinely frightened and immobilized by their potential for healing and inner growth. You know, failure is not the only thing that people fear. It's the idea of finding inner peace and freedom. That can also be immobilizing. And that may not make sense, but let me share just another example. I remember working with a woman whose husband died about 35 years, you know, after being married for 35 years. Sorry about that. And indeed, she was truly grief-stricken and clearly struggling with severe depression. And we continued to work together. And, you know, I always start off by, tell me about your husband. And how did you two kids meet? You know, 35 years of marriage. Wow, you must have seen it all. You know, just to get the story out. Okay. And as we continue to work together, the more of her story of pain and loss started to come out more and more and more. And yet, there was one time when we met when she started to get a glimpse of a healthier life. She actually started to feel better, and she recognized this, and then she immediately said to me, stop, I cannot do this counseling anymore because I don't want you to take away my grief. Now, I knew where a statement like that was coming from, not that I could take away anything that a person wasn't ready to let go of, but realizing that she would rather live in her grief and pain and sorrow than embrace the possibility that she could live a life, all the while being able to hold on to the wonderful memories of her husband. In her mind, you see, if she let go of her grief, she had nothing else better to take on. So as we explore our painful memories, we often catch a glimpse of what healing and wholeness might look for us. This is a good thing. This is what's supposed to happen. And when this insight occurs, we may be tempted to resist change, or we're going to be tempted to run away from transformation, or maybe even sabotage ourselves by falling back into old ways in order to avoid embracing what thorough healing requires of us. That is, acknowledging perhaps a wrongdoing, asking for and receiving forgiveness, letting go of bitterness, letting go of resentment, taking on responsibility, living in gratitude, so on and so forth. Although each person walks his or her own path in this life, embracing forgiveness, healing, grace, and love, and the shadow side occurs as each person is ready. And nobody else can do this for another. You know, the door of healing can be shown, but one must turn the key and walk through. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. So glad that you were able to spend this time with me here tonight, and do have a very pleasant and happy Thanksgiving tomorrow. Be safe. Bye-bye.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.